At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, Removing Spirits, a conversation with Robert Murphy. After coming home from school one day, Robert Murphy found his mother and brother sitting on the couch, terrified. They knew something was in Robert's room. The thing, however, was not of the human or even living form. Something wanted Robert's attention, and day after day would move objects against a specific wall to get it. These events did not terrify Robert. In fact, they intrigued him and led him on a lifelong journey of paranormal exploration.
I've been pretty fortunate in a sense. I mean, I like it, obviously. I dwell in it quite a bit. But what really set me off was actually in high school.
Okay.
I lived five houses up from the school itself, so people would walk up. It wouldn't be uncommon for my friends to walk up, wait for me in my bedroom, whatever. And my mom, she was a very straight-laced woman that, you know, she was a little Bible thumper. That she was always reading the Bible and everything, very clear, never no drinking, no nothing, and very straightforward and whatnot. And I came home one day, and she was like, you've got a guest in your room. I was like, all right, who is it? She goes, no, it's not a who, I think it's a what. Hey, I'm from the country, I know birds can get in the house or something like that. So I was like, no problem. When I walked through the door, she's sitting on the couch with not putting her back towards anything, along with my brother that's next to her. Neither one of them wanted to get up and give anything a chance to get behind them. They were both very terrified. So I go up into my room, and basically everything on the west side of the room would be smashed against the east side of the room. For a week straight, anything I put on that side, it would happen again. So to me, I thought it was fascinating. At that point, I'm all in.
So what is your family? Are you hearing these things happening? Are you hearing them move? Or is it just you go get home and everything's moved?
Yeah, my family members could hear it actually being moved. You know, they would hear things just being destroyed upstairs. Mm-hmm. And so I would put more ammo over there. I'd go ahead and put more stuff to see if it would happen again.
Yeah.
And it was always while I was out of the room. It wasn't while I was in the room. So I was always gone when the activity would actually happen. But we moved a lot when I was growing up. So we had activity, different types of activity. But at that point, I'm old enough at that stage of my life to know, okay, look, there's no explanation why something is going to go from this side of my room to that side of my room and be, you know, partially embedded into the wall being thrown so hard.
Your mother, you get this message when you get home, you know, there's something going on up there. How did she find this out? Did she just walk into the room to put some socks away and then like everything's over on one side of the room Okay.
No. It was too much noise. She was not going upstairs.
Oh, it was the noise itself. Okay. So what was she suspecting at first? Is she thinking there's an animal in your room or something? If she's not going in there and looking, and she's very straight laced and, you know, ghosts are, you know, that's really not in the realm of options. What is she thinking is happening, and how do you relay the message to her?
Well, we actually, again, because we have lived in several different locations, we've had a lot of active locations. I wouldn't call them haunted. Nobody was getting hurt or anything. Mm-hmm. So she did understand that there's a possibility.
Okay.
And that wasn't the first activity that happened in that house. We've all experienced quite a bit of things in the house, but that was the loudest and the most, I guess for a lot of people, it had been a very, you know, aggressive sounding because of hearing so much repetition of noise and things being banging and slammed against the walls and whatnot.
Yeah. So she's realizing and accepting there's something going on up here with all the objects moving around. What is going through your mind? I mean, obviously, you know, you're finding it intriguing. Are you scared at all at this point? Are you concerned? What is going through your mind?
No, I'm fascinated. I want to know what, and that's why I keep reloading the area. I keep putting more and more things back at that area because I know who's coming in and out of our house.
Yeah.
By all means. So I know it's not like somebody going up and playing a prank or anything. The first time, I mean, it's, you know, it's a crazy wow sensation. It's hard to believe. I mean, how do you, my room was, you know, it's an elongated room because it has the eave of the house that comes down and whatnot. So it's kind of an elongated room. So how do you, you know, I don't expect things to be traveling 14, 15 feet across a room.
Sure.
Much less to go ahead and be breaking them or anything. So can it happen again? So now here I am going, okay, let me put some more stuff over there.
Mm-hmm. So how does this situation progress?
That actually only lasted for 2 weeks.
Okay.
For 2 weeks, there was as far as the noise up there. Mm-hmm. And we just treated it, honestly, the house, the entire house got to a point where we just called it George.
Okay.
And we actually gave it a name, said who it was. It would not anything related to anybody that we knew at the time, but with so many different people. Even when I remember my mom's brother actually came over to spend the night, and he was going to stay a couple of nights. Well, he ended up staying longer. And the very next morning, he was so dead tired, and he's like, you know, he ended up sleeping on the couch. He's like, I stayed up. I don't know who was walking back and forth across the floor right next to me, but I know there was a person there. I know there was somebody there that was, you know, and I was not going to go to sleep while this guy is sitting there. He couldn't see him, but he could hear him just walking clearly right next to him.
Yeah.
So with everybody, you know, not even being aware of it, and they would come in and have an experience, got to a point where we just laughed. I mean, to us, nobody was being hurt.
Mm-hmm. So you're having these experiences, they're going on, and you give it a name, George. Are you wondering, you know, who is this George at the time? You know, obviously we're talking several years back. So, you know, the availability of what we have today for some research, you know, not necessarily, you know, at our fingertips, but are you digging in? Are you trying to find why this thing is there or what its purpose is? Where, how does that continue to go for you?
Actually, I actually did go ahead and try to research at the time, regardless of age. I mean, I was only 18 at the time. But I did go ahead. I wanted to check. We had a neighbor that lived and knew the people who had built the houses on one of which that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
And come find out, there was an old baseball player back from the Senators who ended up dying in the house. That's the only one we knew died in the house. So we attributed it to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, years later, you find out that that's not the only possibility. But
sure,
at the time, that was our mentality.
When you look back on that initial experience all these years later, And not just that specific experience of all of the objects moving around in your room, but the collectiveness of everything that happened for you in that house and your family. What do you think it was? Who do you think it was? Do you still think it may be that simple explanation of this is the individual who died in the house, or was it someone or something else?
No, I'm not so sure that it was actually that particular individual, because, you know, from the experience that we have now, we know we only go back so far as what we typically actually run into active hauntings or anything. You're basically looking at like your grandparents, and it's not going back, but so far back, date and time, as far as for intelligent. Now, looking back at it, something was obviously trying to get our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Without a question, I mean, some of the activity, I believe, was just residual. It was frozen in time. It was the event had already happened, whatever, some of the sounds. Things actually moving, we know that's intelligent. So I know now where, you know, things, I don't usually pay attention. I'm one to try to blow things off. I'm regardless of being a paranormal investigator, I'm still skeptic. I'm not going to jump at it and say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm trying to find the other reason why. And by doing that, after you blow things off for so long, you know, if you're on the other side, you're not getting my attention, you're going to try some other way. And eventually, that way is going to seem pretty loud or, you know, obtrusive coming at you. You know, and it's not always meant in an aggressive way or, you know, something mean or anything, but other times it can be.
What do you believe the purpose of getting the attention was for the spirit that was in your house?
That I honestly do not know to this day. I would really like to go back and visit that location to find out. At the time, I wasn't in a mature enough state of mind as far as I was intrigued by it. I wanted to see it. I definitely enjoyed experiencing it, even though it was, you know, for everybody else, they were like, no.
Sure.
Didn't have to worry about anybody going in my room anymore.
Sure. You said something that really kind of intrigues me, and if I'm understanding right, I'm just kind of curious as to what you mean by it. You say, now we realize we only go back so far in terms of what? Are you saying that the conscious spirits or ones that are not residual, do they only go back so far in terms of timeline, in terms of when they were haunting or when they were alive, and then the ability to actively haunt? Or what do you mean by we only go back so far?
Well, I put together a team several years ago, about 10 years ago, and I'm really big on field experience. And field experience, I've got a fantastic medium that she's incredible. So, you know, I do anything I can to go ahead, and I get confirmations for things she picks up on. I'm always looking for confirmation. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the EVPs or the information she provides, or when we do it live, we get a lot of other input from people with abilities. When you actually look at the information we're getting and who we're in contact with, I've never come across, human speaking wise, I've never come across anything that has been more than two generations old, basically. Like my parents' parents at my age. So basically go back two or three generations. We don't collect evidence from anything farther than that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Yeah, and it's not by choice. It's not like, well, that's too old, we're not going to put that in the, you know, in the journal here. It's just not showing up that commonly. And that's an interesting thing. Do you think that has more to do with geography than it does the ability? You know, because in other countries that would have had, you know, more established buildings and people in societies and things of that nature that go far, far older than what we have here in the States, you will sometimes hear of seemingly conscious hauntings that do go back further than what you're describing.
Right. I don't discount the possibilities there. Mm-hmm. I'm just going by what I've actually experienced in the field myself, which
sure.
is what I base most of my information is based on that. And could it be from, well, we know it's not just the ones who are, quote, living here. I mean, we go Native American, they've been here a lot longer.
Sure.
But we still do not catch any reasonable. Now, as far as residual, we definitely catch older residual.
Mm-hmm.
But just intelligent-wise, not in my experience, I just don't catch anything that is extremely old.
This is just a completely an opinion-based question, but why do you think that is?
I do have a belief that, you know, obviously this is not it. Is in my belief as far as reincarnation, or is there something else that our energy moves to? I absolutely believe in that.
Okay.
So I think after so many times, you know, that's why we're not, you know, as people say, there's so many people that died. My gosh, why aren't we flooded with so many energies all around us all the time?
Yeah.
Well, if there was a continuous movement of that energy to somewhere else, you know, a higher plane, whatever you want to call it, different dimension, mm-hmm. then why not? That would kind of explain.
Sure. No, it's an interesting thought, because that's one that I've pondered too, where it's like, well, the sheer amount of people who have died on this planet far outnumber the living. Why are we not,
right.
you know, just inundated with, you know, with spirits, you know, far more than we actually are? And that's something I've wondered. It's like, well, after about, you know, roughly two generations, is there kind of finally that okay, I figured it out. Now I'm going to move on to my next thing, or all of those who I, you know, genuinely have a relationship or a direct, you know, descendant or a grandchild or something that I would genuinely, you know, want to be there and care for, you know, they've passed on as well now too. So I'm good. I don't need to watch my great, 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 great grandchildren who barely know my name unless they found me on Ancestry. Screw them. I'm off. I've done my part. You know, you kind of, you know, wonder about, you know, and that can almost be a very humanistic attitude as well. You know, if you look at it in the living sense, it's like, how many of us know our, like, fifth cousin, you know, or something like that. It's like, and right. Like, I don't really care who, I mean, I guess it'd be neat to know, but it doesn't really make a difference to me. I'm not like feeling like I need to follow them around. So there's a lot of ways where it does make sense. And obviously it's all opinion based, but when we have these not little clues, but kind of big clues as to timeline and where and when, you kind of have to put some dots together. And sometimes we're seeking far more illogical answers than there are logical answers in this world of the paranormal. And sometimes those logical answers, you know, as far-fetched or as fantastical as they may seem, are quite often, you know, the reason for what we're doing. So take me beyond the house. Take me beyond those initial experiences that really sparked it for you growing up. As you got a bit older, how did your journey into the paranormal continue?
I continued, where really the big break came is actually by TV shows. You know, you had Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Paranormal State. Those were like the top three that came out. And the first 2 years that they broke, you know, the negative persona of the paranormal or ghost hunting kind of moved off a little bit. It took a little bit more time for it to come out to where it was okay to say that you actually went ahead and were involved or doing anything that had to deal with spirits and ghosts.
Sure.
At least even now look at the Bible Belt, you know, it's not accepted in that area.
Oh yeah. I live in Arkansas and we have to be very careful when we talk about that. We do a ghost podcast because they look at you like you might be possibly a Satanist. And it's like, no.
Right.
Do a ghost show.
I mean, the stigma to it is unfortunately, yeah. But thankfully because of those shows that gave us the break to go ahead and honestly start really looking into it.
Sure. Sure. So how did that continue for you? How did your journey in that world continue in terms of investigating and really kind of getting more into, a professional, role? I use the term professional. It's like saying, you know, you're an expert at this. All of us, you know, are really into it. I think we're more well informed, but none of us, I think, can claim expert because it is, you know, such a something that's subjective in so many ways, shapes and forms. But where was it where you started to really dive into it, you know, beyond the normal person who's just interested in ghosts?
Realistically, not until around 2004, I actually went ahead and joined a team. I was like, you know, I've got a love for it, so let me go ahead and, you know, there's a team local was actually advertising, wanting help, so I was like, yeah, let me jump in on this. Mm-hmm. And I was only with them for a couple of months, and then I've been in management for a long time, so I understand the rights and wrongs and the way I would do things, and it wasn't, the way they were approaching was completely different than the way I would approach. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of the best word for it. There's a lot of people out there needing help.
Sure.
And the way the help was being presented or even just the review of evidence or anything like that, you know, it's more just by what they've seen on TV, not how they're not really sitting down with the client, sitting down with the homeowners and really going over their issues. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I wanted to go. So in about 2005, I went ahead and started my own team, did it the way I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. So
and in doing so, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, so go ahead. You said in doing so?
In doing so, my direction went a little bit farther. We originally started off documenting, just, you know, that's what most people want to say is, hey, I just want to know I'm not losing my mind. I know I'm catching, you know, I know I see things, but I want to make sure I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And the amount of calls I started getting and contacts, emails for people that were, you know, you got a whole family living in one room, completely terrorized.
Mm-hmm.
How can you not be heartfelt for that, you know?
Sure.
So who are they going to call?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you go online, you look at the online chats, if somebody says that, hey, you call your whole family needs to get medical checkups, mental checkups, you know, you guys are evidently doing drugs, you know? So it's like, how do people reach out for help?
Sure.
So my facet in this, my number one is for people in need. That's my number one that I've ultimately gotten to. So where I've gotten to now is I actually treat people that have attachments, help them out with attachments. Mm-hmm. We go to locations that are supposedly extremely negative, deal with the negativity, you know, so people can get back to having their own lives.
When you started getting those calls, and you know, I know you said initially, you know, it's documenting, it's kind of getting the information. But as you evolved more and more into that, and then wanting to help people in need, what sort of tools did you believe that you could bring to the table when someone calls and the family, you know, they're living in their living room, literally, because they're in such fear? What did you personally think you could bring to the table to an inquiry like that, that others couldn't, other than sympathy and a belief in what is actually happening to the family?
The through time, after having a team, having people together, there was one thing that was pretty consistent that was showing up, is the fact that no matter how many people got scratched or something happened around me, nothing ever happened to me.
Okay.
And I network with a lot of people. I don't care about their religious backgrounds, their beliefs or anything. I care about them, but I respect them. Everybody can have their own. But I'm completely open to anybody's suggestion. Mm-hmm. If somebody does Wicca and they have a suggestion for how to treat something, I'll give it a shot. I'm fine. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But my style came to me with, this is the most bizarre part. I've gotten a little bit of information along the way, but there was nobody to provide the information. The information just started coming to me of what to do. The majority of the information of how I treat a location. So you start off with the one treatment, you know, as far as to go ahead and actually deal with the first house that has issues. And it was extremely successful one day, one time. How is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Luck. You know, maybe it was a placebo effect, you know, the sugar pill.
Sure.
Maybe the family just had to have, you know, be in the right frame of mind. Hey, whatever. I don't care. The family's living fine now. What do I care? The first real big one we did with my team that really pushed it over the top, we had a location that was, you do your research, you want to, of course, check out all the locations. Well, we have a location where a realtor calls one of my team members, says, hey, I'm having this problem. I sold this house 3 times in 1 year. I can't keep doing this. Said, you know, the homeowners, they get in there, they move in, they're all excited. And before you know it, they're bolting out the door. That's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
You know, usually the biggest movies out there, you hear about how this house has sat on the market for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever's happened in the past. Well, this one, guy's selling it pretty regularly. But
sure.
The problem is, nobody can stay there. So I feel for, at that point, I feel for the families. So I go ahead and put a researcher on it. I had a really good researcher at the time. She was phenomenal. And she goes ahead and she starts researching it. Actually, I need document. I don't need, you know, hearsay. I need actual what's happened. Well, the house ends up having 3 suicides by gunshot inside the house, as far as the history of the house. Sorry. Three by gunshot inside the house. Outside the house, another one by gunshot suicide. There was a woman that was considered a black witch, practicing black witch. She hung herself inside the house. It was 2 young males, teenagers from different family lines, and mysteriously fell down the stairs and broke their necks. It's an awful lot in one house.
Yeah.
Still, even at that, I mean, that's documented. Now, there's also witchcraft involved and this devil worship, but I don't know that. That's allegations, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
So we're going to go there. I want to check it out. And when I go to a location like that, the point is I'm looking for the location to prove itself. You know, you can say the ghost, the energy, the entity, the demon, whatever's there.
Yeah.
I need to see it myself. I know the history. I got it. But hey, could things happen? Sure. So we go there. And on the second round, we do 2 rounds up in the attic. On the second round, the realtor's girlfriend was actually in view at the time, and I do a lot of my investigations live. That way people can get a better understanding. I'm not out to convince anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out to provide them a better opportunity to see for themselves.
Sure.
While we're live, she ends up probably getting jumped. It's a short-term possession where she's no longer at the controls. So we met beforehand. I said, if anything goes south, this is what I'm going to do. Gave her my routine just so she knew I was going to touch her with holy water, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it took us several minutes to get her out of there once things started happening. I mean, she's a small person. It took 4 different people to go ahead and actually get her down the attic, stairs, to get her out of that location. That was cool. You know, when you see that, okay, it's proving itself.
Sure.
There's other things that were happening. While that was happening, out of the spirit box, we had a spirit box running, the SB7. It was like giving commands through the SB7, which is bizarre. When you look at the timing, it's amazing. You'll hear her get up, and you'll see her get up right away. So when all that happened, put together a plan, the realtor said, oh, well, week or two later, he calls me back, says, well, I'm getting ready to go to settlement on this. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, how are we, what are we going to come up with this?
No.
I came up with some information. We put a plan together. It's been several years, and that next person moved in never had any issues. Pretty amazing as far as I'm concerned. So over time, it's proven itself over and over. Every time we do this in a certain way, certain format, things have worked out. Everything's been cleared in the same day. But I don't even stop there as far as, I don't care what happens in one day, I want it to be gone. But how often do you read about these locations where, well, it quieted down for a few days, and then it came back?
Yeah.
So I always did a couple weeks. And we've never had an issue since out of any of those.
So when you're investigating that location, and your some of your colleagues are doing the same, and you find out these facts of documented suicides, someone hanging themselves, you know, then of course there's some of the allegation stuff that's in there too. Were you able, or were any of the people who were doing the research able to contact any of the previous owners to have a conversation to ask, hey, you know, what was life like in this house? I mean, it would be obviously a difficult conversation if you're having it with one who is, you know, the companion or the relative of one who committed suicide. You know, was there anybody who spoke out about strange things happening in the house other than obviously, you know, what on the surface may seem to be several very depressed people who lived in the home, but at such a great number, that's where it raises eyebrows.
Right, right. And I completely get that. At the time, we were under confidentiality with the realtor. He didn't want to have us reaching out to anybody in the location.
Okay.
He didn't want to have, you know, he didn't want somebody to go wonder what he's doing or that mess with his credibility as a realtor.
Sure.
You know, it came down to moral. So, could you say that was an issue? There was a lot more that happened with that. Even watching it, you can actually hear, like we have a lot of times we're doing live streaming. Like there was my mediums talking about this little boy being there, little spirit named Kenny. Well, you can actually hear him talk. When you go back and review the live, now we're live streaming, unedited. You go back and listen, you can actually hear when he answers us. It's a little boy. I mean, I can't tell you that he was 4 years old, but you can definitely hear a little boy talk.
Yeah.
So we have those clips to go with. But again, you're right. Without interviewing all the clients, who's to say? My biggest point is, I know that family's not going through anything like
Robert
did.
What I'm wondering is what exactly, I mean, tell me more about what you go through. And I know that you said there was almost that small attachment or almost small possession that went on with the woman. It took her four people to remove her out of the attic. When you're going through this house and you're trying to help these people, what are you doing then to essentially exercise not only just what's affecting the woman at that moment and what's going on in the house, but what are you doing? You're going in with the belief system that, yes, something is happening, but how are you going about exercising it from the house?
Well, in that case, regardless, that was exactly what we actually performed. And I'm not a demonologist. I'm not an actual priest or anybody as far as, you know, to that level by far. Actually, instead, I go to where quite often they fail. So it works out pretty well. With the right team members, when we go into, in that particular case, it was an exorcism of the house. We knew there was some type of energy in the house. It's not the house per se, the drywall, the wood. It's whatever energy is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went in there, I put together a game plan. I wanted to treat the outside as well as the inside, limit where it's at. And, you know, if you hear about demonic and you hear about the infestations, which we had half the side of a house covered with insects that particular night that we went to treat it, was it just by coincidence? Could have been. I'm fine with that. It doesn't matter to me. Again, I'm out to take care of the
sure.
clients. But I have particular prayers that I use. Definitely use the holy water. I actually put up barriers. I consider it barriers when I'm placing the holy water, placing the sign of the cross, and saging. Definitely believe in my sage.
Mm-hmm.
But the combination, it has been effective every place I've gone. So at that point, it's not broke. I'm not fixing it.
Sure. You have a formula that works, and you stick with it.
And people are like, no, you can't fix a house in one day. You can't fix a person in one day. When you're treating a person, there's the difference. You know, we're on the borderline of the mental illness. How I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you if the person's mentally ill or not, right sure. offhand. You know, but we have to take steps. A person that's mentally ill is not going to become healthy in one day, correct?
Sure.
So you got people that are attempting suicide, people that are, you know, having all kinds of issues, hearing voices and whatnot. If that clears up in one day, it's either a placebo effect again, or you did something to get rid of it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm just a conduit for upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I do what I do, as far as the way I do it in the combination. But again, if it's effective, I'm not questioning it.
Sure.
A lot of people go, well, you can't fix a house in one day. Well, if they don't ever have another issue there again,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what to tell you. It's worked.
Sure. Have you ever had cases where it took more than one day to try and exercise something out of a home?
I've honestly had two cases. One case where they came, everything was perfectly calm, quiet, never nothing, and then the resident had started trying to do EVPs inside the house and caught an EVP and scared her. So if you're my client, I'm going to say, look, you know, just don't open the door back up.
Yeah.
You know, do things outside of your house. When you're there, just close off, whatever. But in your home, if you're already scared, don't open the door again. That one did the EVPs and started trying to go ahead and get sessions and make control, you know, touch base with somebody on the other side. They got an answer, so it freaked them out. I'm not wasting my whole team's time again. Because everything we do is for free.
Sure.
And I had another one where the son of the homeowner, he had a girlfriend who supposedly knew witchcraft and started witchcraft. And they said things started happening after several months of everything being quiet. I would not go back for that. Why are you doing, again, why are you practicing after everything is dead quiet?
Yeah.
Everywhere else, I've never gone back a second time.
It's almost like, well, we set another fire and we're going to call the fire department again. Why did you set another fire?
Right, and that's the way, you know, yeah. It's disrespectful.
Yeah.
It's our time. We're trying to help you, and then yet you're going to go back and play with it again? Are you crazy?
Sure.
Good
sure.
luck.
Yeah, it's one thing if the things just kind of return on their own fruition, but if somebody's actively trying to light that fire, that's different. That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Robert Murphy about removing spirits. In part two, we'll ask, are religious relics such as holy water and crosses effective only if everyone involved in an exorcism believes in them? Are religious relics needed to exorcise a home when it's not a dark or demonic entity? What's more difficult to remove from a home, a cantankerous human spirit who refuses to leave the home they loved, or a dark entity fought off with religious relics? And can residual hauntings ever be stopped? Those questions and more in the second part of our conversation with Robert Murphy. To hear it, become a supporter of our show. That's what we call a gravekeeper. You can do so at patreon.com/thegravetalks. It's only $5 a month to get access to part two of this conversation and hundreds of our conversations. Every single one we've ever done, you get access to in their entirety. $5 a month at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a gravekeeper. You can get 1 month free if you sign up for an annual membership. Again, patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a gravekeeper. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.